Today, we are critiquing a manuscript proposing life-coherent medicine, a framework that reorients healthcare from isolated disease management to healing the whole organism within its broader relational and ecological niche.
The conceptual weight of the manuscript's philosophical frameworks occasionally obscures its immediate clinical utility for frontline practitioners.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly where we need to start. So, what is the specific weakness you're seeing there?
The weakness here is that deep theoretical models, things like autopoietic regulation and structural coupling, they precede the grounded clinical realities.
Right.
And that risks fatiguing the primary reader long before they ever reach the highly actionable clinical tools, like the CARE method. I mean, when a frontline clinician sits down with a document like this, they aren't looking for a philosophy seminar, you know?
Oh, for sure. They are actively searching for operational mechanics. They're dealing with, what, 15-minute consultation windows?
Exactly. 15 minutes, massively overburdened schedules, and...
And incredibly complex patients.
Yeah, so if they are asked to wade through heavy ontology, the deep philosophy of being and values, in the first 50 pages, the cognitive load just becomes a massive barrier to entry.
But... You know, I think what the author is really trying to prove early on is that life-coherent medicine isn't just vague holistic thinking. They're trying to rigorously demonstrate that this model is anchored in hard biology and systems theory.
I totally agree, but the approach backfires structurally.
Right. It's like giving someone the architectural blueprints for a house when they just need the key to the front door.
That is a perfect way to put it.
So how do we get them inside faster? I want to challenge you on this. How do we balance the undeniable need for academic rigor with the immediate clinical urgency of the reader?
Well, the suggestion is to invert the flow by leading with concrete clinical vignettes of layered miscoupling before unpacking the systemic theory to ground the concepts in immediate reality. We don't have to sacrifice a single ounce of academic rigor. We flip it.
Okay, flip it how? Like, trace exactly how that structural inversion works. Take the section discussing salagenesis, the origins of health, and the biological phases of defense and clearance. How do we practically restructure that chapter?
Right, so right now the chapter opens with a highly abstract breakdown of biological phases. Instead, for a concrete example, start that chapter with a specific vignette of a patient dealing with an autoimmune disease, depression, and food insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
You demonstrate exactly why this standard biomedical model fails that specific patient. And then once the clinician sees that failure, you introduce the terminology of maladaptive phase locking as the definitive solution to that specific clinical puzzle.
Oh, wow. Okay. That makes total sense. So you introduce the patient. Let's call her Sarah.
Sure, Sarah.
So Sarah has rheumatoid arthritis, but her systemic inflammation simply will not resolve with standard biologics. We look at the layered realities of her life. She is in chronic joint pain, which completely destroys her sleep architecture.
Right, which drives everything else.
Exactly. The chronic lack of sleep spikes her cortisol and stress physiology. And then on top of that, the immense financial strain of her medication copays dictates that she can only afford to buy ultra-processed cheap foods.
Which further drives her metabolic miscoupling.
Yes. By showing Sarah first, the reader feels the exact frustrating knot of multimorbidity they see every single day at the clinic.
Exactly. And once that knot is pulled tight on the page, the clinician is practically begging for a framework to untangle it.
That's the hook.
Right. That is the exact moment you introduce the heavy biological concepts. You explain that Sarah's immune system isn't just randomly broken. It is stuck in an unfinished transition. Her defense mechanism cannot complete its resolution phase because the external affordance field.
Meaning her environment and socioeconomic reality.
Exactly. That field is actively hostile to biological repair. It is constantly re-triggering the defense phase.
So when we invert the flow like that, the abstract concepts of autopoiesis, you know, the way an organism self-creates and maintains its boundaries, and structural coupling, they suddenly aren't abstract anymore.
No, they become tangible.
Yeah. They become the literal, visible mechanisms explaining why Sarah's body is holding on to its disease state.
Precisely. By front-loading the clinical vignettes, you create an immediate sense of forward momentum. The heavy theory then acts as a vital release of tension.
The clinician learns the profound vocabulary of life-coherent medicine organically, right there in the muddy trenches of patient care.
Rather than in a pristine theoretical vacuum.
Exactly. It completely changes the pacing of the first 100 pages.
But giving a clinician these tools is useless if the book isn't actually written for them. The manuscript's attempt to speak to every level of the healthcare ecosystem simultaneously dilutes its most potent message for the practicing clinician.
Yes, this is a critical vulnerability in the writing. The weakness is that by explicitly writing for policymakers, public health officials, Caribbean and SIDS health leaders, and general readers alongside clinicians, the text diffuses its sharp clinical tools.
Like the concept of minimum sufficient force.
Yes, highly operational concepts like minimum sufficient force get buried under these macro-level policy discussions about the civil commons and ecological stability.
It's just too broad.
Right. When a text tries to be a political manifesto for the policymaker, an operational textbook for the doctor, and an educational guide for the general reader, all at once the narrative voice inherently fractures.
You're hitting on a core tension here, though. I mean, the author rightly recognizes that clinical care is just one small concentric circle within public health, which sits within the civil commons, which sits within the broader ecological life ground. They want to fix the entire system simultaneously.
I get that. But is there a risk that focusing broadly on everyone might overlook the specific daily realities of the overwhelmed primary care doctor? Think about the cognitive whiplash. If I am a clinician reading an incredibly useful section about minimum sufficient force, how to apply the lowest necessary intervention to allow the organism to heal, I am fully engaged in my professional domain.
Right. You're learning how to use the care method?
Exactly. But if the very next page pivots to a broad directive aimed at government officials about redesigning macroeconomic dashboards or overhauling public health infrastructure,
you're suddenly alienated?
I am being handed a massive lever that I have absolutely no institutional power to pull.
Well, wait, I have to offer a mild pushback here.
Okay.
Because the manuscript makes a uniquely powerful case for treating public health as a form of niche repair. Doesn't narrowing the audience strictly to clinicians risk undermining the author's holistic goal? Specifically, this manuscript heavily emphasizes integrating the lived realities of the Caribbean and Small Island Developing States, or SIDS.
Mm-hmm.
These nations face massive supply chain vulnerabilities and post-colonial economic structures that directly impact health. If we cut out the policymakers, do we lose that vital island-scale organism-niche coupling that makes this work so original?
I see what you're saying. But the suggestion is to sharpen the primary focus directly on the clinician, treating public health and policy not as parallel distinct audiences, but entirely as the broader niche the clinician must understand to navigate patient care. We don't remove the Caribbean and SIDS context at all. We simply recontextualize it.
So how does that look in practice on the page?
For a concrete example, revise the reader's guide in the framing of Part B so that public health and macroeconomic dashboards are framed strictly as tools for the clinician's understanding of the patient's environment rather than separate directives for government officials.
Oh, I like that. That shifts the paradigm entirely.
Yeah.
Instead of facing a health minister and saying, "You must fix the food supply chain because it's driving non-communicable diseases," the text turns to the clinicians and says, "You must understand that your patient's food supply chain in this specific island economy acts as a hard structural limit on their metabolic repair."
Exactly. It empowers the clinician to stop blaming the patient for non-compliance. If the clinician understands that the civil commons are degraded, that the patient literally does not have safe, well-lit spaces to walk, or that importation laws make ultra-processed foods the only affordable option on the island,
then they actively adjust their minimum sufficient force accordingly.
Yes. They realize that prescribing a costly, idealized lifestyle change isn't just unhelpful. It is actually a form of implementation violence.
Implementation violence. Wow. Because it stresses the patient further. They literally cannot comply with an impossible demand.
Right. It transforms public health data from abstract, detached statistics into a vital, urgent diagnostic lens for the individual exam room. When the clinician looks at a macroeconomic dashboard, they aren't looking at it to write national policy. They're looking at it to calculate the exact restorative margins available to the exhausted human being sitting in front of them on the exam table.
And think about how this audience alignment sharpens the tone of the book.
Mm-hmm.
By directing the voice solely to the clinician, the tone becomes fiercely protective. The author is no longer a detached philosopher lecturing a broken system from above. They become an experienced mentor standing shoulder to shoulder with the primary care doctor, validating their burnout.
And offering them a totally new grammar to survive and heal patients within that broken system.
Right. But if we are going to focus intensely on empowering the clinicians to navigate these massive systemic hurdles, we have to make sure the book's most powerful systemic concept isn't left stranded in the theoretical background. The brilliant systemic analysis of capture modes remains somewhat isolated from the specific disease formulations later in the text.
This is perhaps the biggest missed opportunity for actionable impact in the manuscript. The weakness is that concepts like metric capture, burden displacement, and commercial capture are introduced masterfully as standalone systemic issues in Part 2, but they aren't fully utilized as explicit diagnostic tools in the later chapters on immune disease, neuropsychiatric disease, or non-communicable diseases.
The tools are built and then just left in a silo.
Exactly.
Just to anchor this for a moment for anyone following along. A capture mode occurs when a system's tools or measures become entirely detached from the life they're supposed to serve.
Right.
So, like, a hospital ward optimizes for rapid 3-day patient discharges to meet a metric. But in doing so, it destroys the relational margin the nurses need to actually teach the patient how to care for themselves at home. And the result is a 30-day readmission. That's metric capture. The metric literally destroyed the healing.
Precisely. And the suggestion is to weave the capture modes directly into the specific disease formulations to make them active clinical diagnostic tools rather than just public health commentary. We need to take these massive observations and force them into the micro-level clinical formulation templates that the doctor uses every single day.
Let's look at the section discussing non-communicable diseases, or NCDs. How do we pull a concept like commercial capture out of the theory section and weaponize it in the NCD chapter?
For a concrete example, in the NCD chapter, explicitly list commercial capture, such as the aggressive marketing of ultra-processed foods, as a vital diagnostic element of a patient's conserved miscoupling for diabetes. This directly connects the macro theory to the microclinical problem of glucose management.
Oh, so when the clinician is formulating the case, they don't just write down type 2 diabetes.
No, they write down type 2 diabetes conserved by commercial capture and depleted restorative margins.
It completely changes how the clinician views the pathology.
Exactly. Building on that point, what if we looked at it from the perspective of a patient's polypharmacy directly through the lens of burden displacement?
Okay, walk me through that. How does burden displacement change the way we view polypharmacy?
Imagine a patient dealing with heart failure, advanced diabetes, and severe anxiety. And they are currently taking 12 different medications.
Typical Tuesday in a primary care clinic.
Right, exactly. One treats blood pressure, one treats fasting glucose, another treats the severe acid reflux caused by the first drug, and another treats the insomnia caused by the anxiety of managing it all. Each individual specialist in the fragmented healthcare system did their specific job correctly according to the guidelines.
But the system as a whole displaced the massive burden of biological and logistical integration entirely onto the sickest person in the room, the patient.
Yes, the invisible work of illness. The patient is suddenly managing a massive supply chain of logistics, symptom monitoring, and pharmacy runs, all while their biological margins are actively collapsing. They are failing to heal because managing the cure is destroying their allostatic load.
Right. Moving away from the traditional rigid risk factor model is clearly the goal here. And the text successfully champions a move from patient compliance to co-creation. But I want to push the envelope on the mechanics of this. How might a doctor literally document something abstract like cultural masking or epistemic capture in a patient's medical chart alongside a diagnosis of multimorbidity?
Well, if we actively weave burden displacement into the multimorbidity chapter, the clinician doesn't just see a non-compliant patient failing to take 12 pills on time. The clinician is trained to diagnose the polypharmacy itself as a symptom of burden displacement.
So the therapeutic intervention isn't adding a 13th drug to treat a new symptom.
No, the medical intervention is aggressive deprescribing, simplifying the regimen, and actively restoring the patient's margin.
It makes the systemic failure medically legible.
Exactly.
And what about epistemic capture? If a patient is repeatedly avoiding preventative care, the clinician might historically chart that as lost to follow-up and blame the patient's lack of engagement.
Right.
But using this embedded framework, they could chart it as epistemic capture, recognizing that the patient's lived experience of pain was repeatedly dismissed in previous clinical encounters because their symptoms didn't perfectly match a standardized lab result.
Yeah.
That epistemic failure destroyed their trust in the system, and that loss of trust is the actual barrier to care.
By making these capture modes active, charting diagnostic tools, you fulfill the fundamental promise of life-coherent medicine. You aren't just treating the isolated biological organism. You are actively mapping the exact world that the organism is trying and failing to conserve.
You give the practitioner the ultimate double vision, the ability to see the disease clearly while simultaneously seeing the life clearly.
And that is exactly what the frontline clinician needs right now. They don't need to be told the system is broken. They already know that. They need a new grammar to practice medicine inside the wreckage. And if the author can restructure the manuscript to deliver these tools directly to them, it will be absolutely revolutionary.
This has been a deeply constructive look at a manuscript that is actively trying to push the boundaries of modern healthcare. To quickly recap our three main actionable suggestions for the author today. First, ground the deep philosophical frameworks in immediate clinical vignettes to improve flow. Second, tighten the audience focus primarily on the clinician to ensure the practical tools aren't diluted by policy directives. And third, actively weave the brilliant systemic capture modes directly into the individual disease diagnosis. We want to extend our deepest thanks to the creator for submitting this incredibly ambitious work, and we warmly invite them to submit their revised materials back to the critique for further exploration.